participate further, but rather Garbhadakshay Vishnu is, and Lord Brahma. They are now going to carry on the procedure. Mahavishnu has glanced, so he has done basically his part. Does that sound okay? Text 20. By conglomerating all those separate entities, he manifested the innumerable mundane universes and himself entered into the inmost recess of every extended conglomerate. At that time, those jivas who had lain dormant during the cataclysm were awakened. So now Shiradakshay Vishnu, this is Shiradakshay Vishnu, he is entering into every atom. And the jivas, if you remember, we showed them on the board, going down through the glands. So at some time, they went through the glands, they were put in the individual universes. Now they're starting to wake up. And in text 22, which we're going to be doing on, you know, next week, so to speak, on Thursday, then Lord Brahma actually comes and it all, everything becomes totally activated. But now the jivas at least are starting to become active. And text 21. The same jiva is eternal and is for eternity and without a beginning, joined to the Supreme Lord by the tie of an eternal kinship. He is transcendental spiritual potency. So this is descriptive, describing the jiva. If we go through the purport, we'll see that there are a number of characteristics. There's about eight. Right at the beginning, it says, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, that the jivas are eternally joined with Krishna, just as the sun is eternally associated with his rays. Well, we should say the Supreme Lord is joined with the jivas, just as the sun is eternally associated with his rays. Then, a little further down, it says, he says that they are not perishable, they're eternal, infinitesimal particles of his spiritual effulgence. Then a little further down, they minutely display the qualities of Krishna. Hence, they have knowledge, they are knowers, they have a sense of identity, a sense of enjoying, they can think, they can do, just as Krishna can, they can. And a little further down again, they're transcendental, about halfway down. They are his transcendental potency. A little further down again, about three quarters of the way down, they're tatastha or marginal potency. A little further down again, they are susceptible to the influence of the material energy. Why? Because they're small. Because they're very small. However, at the end of the purport, as long as the jiva remains submissive to Krishna, who is the Lord of Maya, he will not be influenced by Maya. Otherwise, if he doesn't remain submissive, then since time immemorial, he's been undergoing birth, death, and everything else, and will continue to. So, that briefly is a little overview of those verses. Does anyone have any comments or questions? Innumerable jivas as spiritual particles emanating from the Oversoul in the form of pencils of rays of effulgence have no relation with the mundane world when they come to know themselves to be the eternal servants of the Supreme Lord? Well, I would say not. I would say not. Or I would say not necessarily at all. You know, the fact is that as conditioned souls, when each creation is destroyed, and then they all go back into Mahavishnu. So that has been going on for a long time. We've gone in and out of Mahavishnu many times. Yeah. So he just says that the innumerable jivas as spiritual particles, that they emanate from the Oversoul, which is Mahavishnu. So that's true. At the time of creation, they emanate again. I mean, they have to come out. They can't stay in him. So they emanate. They come out. Yeah, they go actually through the glands. Yeah. And the way they do that, it's something like pencils of rays of effulgence. You know, very rapidly, they pass through the glands. So I don't think that, you know, particularly when we understand that at the end of the previous manifestation, everything's destroyed, they all go back into Mahavishnu. And now here we are at the beginning of another creation, so they have to go back in. If we understand in those terms, then I don't think there's, you know, a real problem. I don't know what you think. It doesn't say that they're originating so much. Yes. Well, that's just his way of saying they go back to Godhead. Yes. His use of language. You know, we don't use language exactly the way he does sometimes. So if when they come out, they become pure devotees, then they're incorporated, then they go back to Godhead. And see, then there's another point. And this, in the long run, is a more important point, because you didn't mention, although we mentioned yesterday, that back in text 11 does say, Lord Brahma does say, that Mahavishnu is the creator of thousands of individual souls. Now, if anything were to support, you know, something along the lines of what you were suggesting, that maybe we come from the Brahma Jyoti, or maybe we were actually non-existent, but then we were created by Mahavishnu. Well, that would seem to, you know, support that. But the thing is, and Jiva Goswami discusses this at great length in Krishna Sandarbha, and it's a very important point, is that sometimes, due to there being a certain context in a scripture, the speaker may present a particular point in a way which, due to the context, is kind of uncharacteristic for how that point is normally expressed. Like here, you know, in text 10, it definitely sounds like they're not eternal. Right? The individual soul. It definitely sounds like that. He is the creator of so many individual souls. So, you know, someone might say, aha, we have now found the answer. And then they may write a book about it. And think up some clever name like, what is it, in Vaikuntha, even the leaves do not fall, or something like that. Anyway, the thing is that when there are certain specific circumstances under which a statement is being made, then a statement may be made about a subject which is, you know, commonly discussed, but due to the circumstances, there it may be discussed in a slightly different way. So rather than think that all the other places, like in this case, all the other places where it says the soul, the individual living entities are eternal, rather than think that all those other statements are wrong, and this isolated statement is now right, you know, and can supersede all the other statements. Actually, we should understand it's the other way around. Yeah. And look for an understanding. Actually, look for an understanding in terms of the commonly accepted understanding. Jiva Goswami talks about this because he's particularly talking about it in regard to the idea that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the number one original. So Jiva Goswami points out, and he actually states the verses. There are a few verses which express things in such a way that it appears that Krishna is not the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just a few. Like, for example, when Arjuna and Krishna went to Mahavishnu to retrieve the children of that Brahmin couple, then Mahavishnu tells Krishna that you should finish your pastimes and come back to me. In other words, you might think Krishna is an incarnation of Mahavishnu. That's the idea being presented. However, elsewhere, in many, many places, there are statements that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead and Mahavishnu is coming from him. So Jiva Goswami says, we should then accept the general principle which has been established in so many places. And when we come across these odd places where some other idea is presented, then we should actually interpret those in terms of the general understanding. And in this particular case regarding Mahavishnu, Jiva Goswami gives a very nice and very interesting explanation, is that this is Mahavishnu's opinion. Yes, Mahavishnu thinks like this. Actually, he's not right. He is just expressing his idea. And he's thinking, yes, you're the incarnation of me. You came from me. But he's not correct. Yes. And anyway, we won't go into that. Not that he's really in Maya. And maybe he's in Yoga Maya or something like that. But it's not entirely correct. Yeah. So here, you know, sometimes we come across statements like this. But we should understand that we're all eternal. We haven't come from the Brahma Jyoti. We haven't come from Mahavishnu. You know, we haven't come from anywhere really. We are eternal. And on that note, he manifests, when he contacts Maya, then a certain principle of material consciousness manifests. Is that okay? Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Section, all seven texts, I think we should be able to. And then tomorrow we'll start with the Govindam prayers, which of course are really the essence of Brahma Samhita. Okay. So let us begin by chanting text 22 responsively. Evam sarvatma sambandham nabhyam padmam harer abhut tatra brahma bhavad bhuyash chatur vedi chatur mukha. Translation. The divine lotus which springs from the navel pit of Vishnu is in every way related by the spiritual tie with all souls, and is the origin of four-faced Brahma, versed in the four Vedas. So here the lotus is coming out of the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Brahma is appearing, and this particular Brahma is that Brahma who is versed in the four Vedas. Not the Brahma we heard about earlier, who's the prototype, Hiranyagarbha, who embodies the mundane seminal principle, or the entire capacity for material reproduction or material creation, like that, material expansion. So this lotus is interesting. If you want to find out a little bit more about the lotus, you could read the 8th chapter of the 3rd canto. There is reference, a little more detail about this lotus. There, 3rd canto, chapter 8, verse 14, refers to the bud of the lotus. Means the actual, like the flower part on the top of the stem, but before it's opened up. So the bud of the lotus is referred to there as being the sum total form of the fruitive activity of the living beings. And in his purport to the following verse, 3.8.15, Srila Prabhupada says that the lotus flower is the Virat Rupa. That's interesting. And it was previously amalgamated in the Supreme Lord's abdomen at the time of dissolution. It is also, well, here in Brahma Samhita, the first sentence of the purport describes that lotus as being the superior plane of aggregation of all individual souls. In other words, all the living entities are within the stem of the lotus. And the first living entity, of course, is Brahma. He's the first one to come out on top of the lotus, and then he brings them all out and then facilitates them, provides bodies, planets, and so on. Here Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says quite clearly in the following sentence that the four-faced Brahma, the image of self-enjoyment, derives his origin from the prototype Brahma, or Hiranyagarbha, the mundane seminal principle, who regards the aggregate of all mundane entities as his own proper body. So this Hiranyagarbha is really quite an extraordinary entity. He is the universal form, the Virat Rupa. He regards all the conditioned souls, every single one of them, not just the ones in this universe, but all of them, as being like his body. Srila Prabhupada elsewhere says that Hiranyagarbha is a form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and some people worship Hiranyagarbha, but he's not really worshipable as a form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not that you would put him on the altar or something like that to offer arati, but he is a very special form, like functional form, expanded type of functional entity. And actually Srila Prabhupada doesn't really say a lot about Hiranyagarbha. That this is not working. Okay, just bear with us, and we'll try and get another amplifier. Can you hear me? Hardly. Well, if he cannot locate another amplifier, perhaps we should move forward. What do you think of that? Yes? If the fan is interfering, and if you prefer being warm and hearing, which would be better, I suppose, then let us try without the fan or with it slowed down. All right. So, then, Chen Sol. And in his case, he has a particular propensity towards creating. Here in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that towards the end of the purport, his natural impulse is formed according to the nature of the deeds done by him in the previous kalpa. Here we have another potentially confusing concept or statement. Previous kalpa. Kalpa normally refers to a day of Brahma. Normally. If you look through Srila Prabhupada's books, if you look through Prabhupada's folio, then you'll see that generally this term kalpa is used to refer to a day of Brahma, although sometimes it refers to a lifetime of Brahma. Actually, Prabhupada explains there are three types of kalpas. There is a mahakalpa, a vikalpa, and a kalpa. Mahakalpa refers to that time when there is creation from Mahavishnu. Vikalpa refers to that time when Brahma creates immediately following Mahavishnu's creation. And kalpa normally refers to Lord Brahma's day. So in the purport we see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is using this word kalpa, previous kalpa, but actually we can understand that this is a mahakalpa, because Mahavishnu is creating. And now we're going into the vikalpa, because Lord Brahma is about to start the secondary creation. So this is really the beginning of Brahma's life. This is the beginning of Brahma's life. In text 24. So now it starts to get very interesting. Then the goddess of learning Saraswati, the divine consort of the Supreme Lord, said thus to Brahma, who saw nothing but gloom in all directions, O Brahma, this mantra, Kleem Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Jana Valabhaya Swaha, will assuredly fulfill your heart's desire. So this Saraswati is the wife, one of the wives at least, of Mahavishnu. She is an expansion of Rama. She is an expansion of the goddess of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. She is not Saraswati, the material goddess of learning. She's actually, the verse refers to her as Divya Saraswati, the divine Saraswati, or the transcendental Saraswati. And she is empowered to instruct Lord Brahma. You may recall, it's actually in that 8th chapter. No. It's in the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto. There are at least two places in Srimad Bhagavatam where there are descriptions of Brahma's appearance and what happened immediately after he appeared. One is the 8th chapter of the 3rd canto, and now we're going to refer to the 9th chapter of the second canto, just before Krishna speaks the Chatushloki Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma. So it describes there how he came out, Brahma came out of the lotus flower, and he was trying to figure out, as it says here, he saw only gloom. He was trying to understand. He was in darkness, trying to understand, who am I, what am I, how did I get here, what am I meant to do now that I am here, and what is the situation? So he started climbing down the lotus stem until he felt he couldn't go any further. And then he heard the syllables tapa repeated, tapa, tapa, twice. Those syllables were pronounced. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on text 25, he makes the point that, well, there you see in text 25 in the Sanskrit, you see the word tapa appears twice. Tapas tvam tapa etena. So Jiva Goswami seems to intimate that appearance of Lord Brahma described in the ninth chapter of the second canto and this appearance of Lord Brahma, they're the same. But that here, you know, instead of Lord Brahma just simply hearing tapa only, and of course, you know, we can understand that he wouldn't know what to do other than just tapasya. What's he going to meditate on when he does his tapasya? But according to what Jiva Goswami intimates, at least, he was also instructed, as here, by Saraswati, that along with performing his tapasya, he should meditate on this mantra. And text 25 says, O Brahma, Saraswati is speaking, O Brahma, do thou practice spiritual association. Anyway, the Sanskrit says spiritual austerity. I suppose in a sense you could say the terms are possibly interchangeable. Do thou practice spiritual association by means of this mantra, then all your desires will be fulfilled. Now, of course, we just heard in text 23 that Brahma has the desire to create. So the purport of text 24 gives very interesting description in this regard. In fact, I think I will read this purport. It really is very interesting. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, the mantra consisting of the 18 divine letters prefixed by the Karma Bija is alone super excellent. Can you hear at the back? Can you hear? It has a twofold aspect. One aspect is that it tends to make the pure soul run after all attractive Sri Krishna, the Lord of Gokula, and the divine milkmaids. This is the acme, which means the perfection of the spiritual tendency of the jivas. When the devotee is free from all sorts of mundane desires and willing to serve the Lord, he attains the fruition of his heart's desire, which is love of Krishna. So that, I think, we can understand. That's already been discussed. But now, the second aspect is discussed, and this is very interesting and rather touchy, actually, a delicate matter. But in the case of the devotee who is not of unmixed aptitude, this super excellent mantra fulfills his heart's desire also. You understand what that means? Not of unmixed aptitude. Not unmixed. Not pure. That devotee who still has material desire. And the fact is that Lord Brahma is such a devotee. He is such a devotee. His desire is not unmixed. It is mixed. He has material desire, and particularly in the form of the desire to create.